Local Matters, Mountain Express's weekly news podcast. This is news editor Margaret Williams, and I'm joined by reporter Jake Frankel, who attended the Buncombe County Commissioners meeting this week where they talked trash.
They did indeed talk trash. The trash talking came in various forms. They heard a series of reports by county staff on the county's various environmental initiatives, including the latest goings-on at the landfill. The landfill processes roughly, on average, 1 million pounds of trash every single day, which struck me as a lot. And that is in despite of all the county's various recycling programs and ordinances.
Which aims to take things out of the trash cycle and not have to have them buried and landfilled and all that good stuff.
Exactly. And they are having some success. They are currently recycling, on average, about 100,000 pounds of recyclables, such as everything from cardboard to plastic bottles to some electronic equipment. So they are making a dent in all that garbage that's just sitting there in the landfill, but they admitted that they had some more work to do. They also discussed the county's carbon footprint, which they calculated taking into account everything from employees' commutes to and from work to the costs of heating and cooling buildings. The facility operations accounted for the biggest impact and carbon emissions. And the study period they discussed at this meeting looked at the time frame between 2005 and 2010. And what they found was that overall county government carbon emissions went up in that time because they had a lot of facility expansions. But if you analyze it per square foot, it actually went down. And county staff credited a number of things they've done in that time for that improvement, such as replacing new windows in a lot of buildings, updating heating and cooling systems, and so on. They also touted the fact that the Buncombe County Department of Human Services building on Cox Avenue, which is undergoing extensive renovation right now, is scheduled to be fitted with solar thermal hot water systems and electronic vehicle charging stations.
Awesome. But then in some other environmental news that's perhaps not so good relates to the old CTS plant. Buncombe County Commissioners have been involved with a process to demolish that property.
Yeah, that process started a couple months ago when some neighborhood activists asked the commissioners to condemn and demolish the old building on the CTS site. One DeGree and the county manager updated the commissioners this week on that. The county recently took action to legally condemn the building after trying to negotiate with the property owner and the property owner refusing to take the building down themselves. They condemned it so that they can now demolish the building without the property owner's participation in that. They have contracted out with a private firm to take out the building at a cost of $160,000, which the county is planning to spend. That'll be taxpayers' money. But they're hoping to put a lien on the property after that and eventually recover that money from the owners. One interesting thing that came up at the meeting was conservative talk radio show host and former Republican candidate for Commissioner Don Yelton accused the commissioners of doing this as a political ploy and said that he worries it will actually make the contaminants on this site spread easier without the shelter above them. County staff and commissioners have asserted, though, that this will actually help the process of cleanup, and that's why they're doing it. And they also have noted that they're doing it with the support of the EPA. They've also said they're going to take great care not to mess up any of the EPA's current well monitoring systems, which are in that building. And they are specifically going to leave the foundation intact, which some analysts have said would help prevent the demolition process from negatively affecting the spread of that contamination.
EPA officials said that concrete foundation essentially caps some of the material that may be underneath there. Yeah. But I know there have been concerns. Citizens have reported, and there are signs from, that you can see in photos of the building that show vandalism, people being in the building. So that does pose a safety hazard. So there's that element. The building was owned by CTS Corporation, which did an electroplating operation there for about almost 30 years. And that's where the source of the contamination is, and possibly some responsibility. So it'll be interesting to see how commissioners, how they get that cost back. It's a very complicated procedures going on here with the EPA.
Absolutely. And this process is going to continue. And it does seem like things are going the direction of some kind of legal battle between the current owners and the county. And it's hard to say how the former owners will be involved in that as well. I do want to mention, because you mentioned trash talking, Don Yelton, when at the meeting when he was speaking about this issue, refused to stop after his allotted 3 minutes were up, and then went and approached the commissioners and was pacing back and forth in front of them, refusing to be silent at the urging of Vice Chair Bill Stanley, who was filling in for David Gant, who was absent. And Bill Stanley did at one point kick Mr. Yelton out of the courtroom, and Mr. Yelton, as he was leaving, screamed out that it was an honor to be kicked out. So.
Well, even a little more background there is Don Yelton used to work for the county, and I first met him when he was handling their recycling. So the trash talking has come full circle in a way. And now join us is Susan Andrew, our Green Scene environmental reporter, who's been working on the CTS story in general, and we have some updates. Like I just saw a press release from the Environmental Protection Agency naming their latest additions to the National Priorities List, otherwise known as Superfund, and CTS is not on it. So what other tidbits can you add to this mix of condemnations and Superfund and CTS and et cetera?
Yes, there are some EPA officials in town today, including Samantha Urquhart-Foster, who is EPA's remediations coordinator on the CTS case. And she let me know that the listing on the National Priorities List, aka Superfund, is being delayed because it's taking her longer than anticipated to analyze the comments. They're required to collect public comments when they want to list a property like this, and analyzing those comments is taking longer than she expected, but she does anticipate that it will be listed when she gets that complete. And I noted that the sign with the Superfund logo has been posted on CTS property today.
Interesting. And today is September 14th, 15th. Today is September 15th. And the EPA has indeed been in town doing their regular testing of private and other monitoring wells that they use around CTS, that site, and residents. There were several residents who were horribly affected by contaminated water, which they drunk for at least a decade.
That's right, and a lot of those residents are a little frustrated that they're still just sampling and not actively cleaning up, but I think those residents will be somewhat placated by the fact that the condemnation proceedings are now probably going to be going forward and the building will probably be demolished.
Interesting developments. We're going to stay tuned to that, and we'll anxious to know if any, it'll be a few months probably before we know any results of the latest well monitoring, the testing and such that's going on, and we'll see how the legal stuff develops. Well, thank you, Susan, for joining us with that. And Jake, you also, in some totally other news, You gave us a little preview that's coming up in this week's paper about something WinCap is up to.
Yeah, WinCap is having their annual Raise Your Hand benefit auction this coming September 24th. It's at the DoubleTree Resort this year, and it's happening 30 years after the original cases of a mysterious pneumonia were first reported in the United States that was then later diagnosed as and called HIV/AIDS. WinCap is an organization that works throughout the region to help prevent the spread of the virus and also to help provide services to those who have it. They one of the most important things they do is help distribute state and federal aid programs so that folks can get the new medications that have been developed in recent years that keep them alive for a long, long time. This is one of the biggest improvements with our understanding of the disease that used to be really a death sentence and it really isn't anymore. At the same time, the folks at WinCap report that they still are battling a lot of negative stigmas surrounding the disease, and they do that through a number of outreach and education programs. The auction benefit that's coming up is open to the public. Tickets are $125 to get in. That includes alcohol, food, music, and a keynote address by Dr. Polly Ross, who is one of the founders of the WNC Community Health Services Clinic. And she also has extensive experience researching and treating HIV/AIDS.
Well, good. Good to hear that. It'll be a good event supporting a worthy cause. Another event that WinCap puts on is Dining Out for Life, which raised them a good bit of money this year. I believe they serve over 400 patients. And when the WinCap started in 1986, they had just a few hundred. So HIV/AIDS has not gone away, and there's still a lot of work to be done.
Very true.
So thank you for joining us, Jay.
Thank you.
Now we're going to talk about our Women in Business special issue. We have quite a few advertorials that where local women business owners get to tell you something about their business. So look for that. There's a lot of material there, a lot of good businesses. We've also selected a few local women business owners and women working in business to profile them and let you know a little bit more about them. And here joining me in the studio is Tracy Rose, a contributing editor at Express, who used to cover county commissioner meeting stuff for us. She has worked on a really interesting story about working moms, but that doesn't quite say it all. Tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay. Hi, Margaret. Yeah, the story that I worked on was really fun for me because I got to talk to 9 different women who combine part-time work while also fitting in taking care of their children. So they felt strongly that they didn't want to use daycare, although they had passed no judgment on women who do or need to do so. But they were able to really tap into their something that really excited them. So I talked to a music teacher, a woman that delved into her own family genealogy and then does the same for others, a woman who helped found a new church in town, someone who makes
quite a variety.
Oh, it's really it's really inspiring because they delved into what really excites them and what's really their own passions.
So tell us about one of the women. I recall Stacy DeMuzio was a doula.
Right, she's a childbirth doula. So she changed careers basically. She had been working in television and then at a children's museum, but she had an amazing birth experience and she wanted to be able to bring that helping to other women. So she founded her own business as a doula, and she also manages to take care of her child with the help of her partner and also back up childcare whenever the time comes.
Wow, that's very crucial service. Some of the other women that you talked to is Amanda's the...
Yeah, she's a co-pastor of a new church in town. And
her full name, fill in the blank for me,
Amanda.
Oh, I'm sorry,
Amanda Hendler-Voss.
Hendler-Voss.
Right, and she and her co-pastor, who's also a woman, founded a new church, and she's able to work there 30 hours a week, but also take care of her son, Miles. And she feels like being a pastor and a mom complement each other. And so she was really inspiring. I mean, they really all were.
Well, that's what's interesting to me about the story. Some of these women have been in business full force, full-fledged at times, and this is an alternative way for them to kind of keep their foot in the door and follow something with their passion.
Exactly. Yeah, one of the moms I talked to is... she does back office work for Carolina Mornings, which is a real estate, vacation real estate and property management company. And she had worked there full time, and then she had her daughter, Ren. And currently, Ren's only 6 months old, but she's able to take her daughter to work with her like one morning a week. And the baby can nap and actually participate with her mom in Skype teleconferences with her boss in Chapel Hill, which...
So that's the source of those baby commercials with the investor. Now we know.
No doubt.
Now we know.
And we also have a list of resources.
Right, resources. If you're interested in forming a business of your own, We've got a list of places where you can go get help.
There is. There's actually a workshop coming up on September 29th, I think it starts. It's a free business seminar offered here in Asheville, and it's worth checking out, I think. It specifically targets minority and underserved community members that might need some help in starting a business or getting in the business world.
And where can folks go to get a little more information about that workshop?
They can call 281-1227. That's the Eagle Market Streets Development Corporation, which is a nonprofit here in town. Or they could go to the website, which is eaglemarketsts.net. Or they can wait till the paper comes out and check out what we've written about them.
Right, because that'll be up next week. Well, thank you, Tracy, for joining us. And stay tuned for more about women in business. Joining me now in the fine Mountain Express news studio is senior news reporter David Forbes, who attended the Asheville City Council meeting this past week, and
yes,
they talked about food trucks. And
again.
Trucks of food. Food trucks.
Trucks selling food. Again, the big issue before Asheville City Council was food trucks. Listeners, I guess, not viewers, will probably remember this came up in late August as well, on August 23rd. And at that point, new rules that have been crafted about over the past year by a subcommission of the Downtown Commission and by city staff and food truck owners and people involved in downtown, these rules finally came to City Council late last month. And they passed 4-3 after a very contentious public debate and a very contentious debate on council. However, any change to this, to the city's Unified Development Ordinance, basically the city's Bible as far as development goes, requires either a 5-2 vote or better, more than 5 votes on council to pass in one go, or 2 consecutive 4-3 votes. So because it passed so narrowly, it came back to council again this time, this meeting on September 13th. And it was interesting because you didn't have as much of a contentious public hearing this time because the public hearing we'd done the last one. But you did have Councilwoman Esther Mannheimer proposed two pretty important amendments to it, and she saw both fail. Mannheimer had voted for the rules originally, but she said that she was concerned about noise. She said that she didn't like the food, that the food trucks could be open until 2 a.m. under these rules, which is scaled back from 3 a.m. in the original proposal. Things could be open until 2 a.m. She said stuff being open that late reminded her more of a college town than Asheville. So she wanted the hour scale back to 11, that found no other supporters on council.
No one even seconded that.
And that had been a complaint from some people who had opposed the new rules, that they're worried this will cause too much noise downtown. Certain proponents of it said that, you know, food truck owners need to have the right to run a business. There are no constraints on how long a bar or restaurant stays open downtown. Or a restaurant specifically stays open downtown. One could stay open 24 hours if it wished. But there was a kind of a concern here by some of the opponents. And the proponents said, you know, the people eating late night need more food options in Asheville. Especially, you know, people who've been out drinking a bit and need to eat some food before they head home or something. That's actually an actual concern. That's a niche that the food truck owners are saying they want to sell to. But that debate had all happened before. That motion completely failed. Another motion the new rules allow 10 food trucks downtown, or 10 food truck owners.
And Mannheimer suggested cutting that in half,
To five. And there are, that might have been a little problematic because there are more than 5 locally owned food trucks already up and operating, and most of those want to get into downtown.
Applied.
No, they can't apply yet. They were getting to that point in the story. They are able to apply now. That motion failed more narrowly. It failed 4-3. Mannheimer was joined by Mayor Terry Bellamy and Councilmember Jan Davis, who had both opposed the rules originally.
Her attempts at amendments failed, so it came down to just voting over what had been passed.
Over what had been passed. There was a tweak as far as saying that they'd look and see how much it costs them to enforce this and might raise the fee in the future if that was, you know, necessary, and that they'd, you know, look at propane tanks just to make sure there weren't any fire hazards. But it was pretty much the same thing that had been debated and passed at the August meeting. So that passed 5-2 this time. You had the four people who supported before, including Manheimer, still supported it. And you also had Councilmember Cecil Bothwell, who had attracted some notice last time when he successfully amended the rules to require the food trucks to use plug-in electrical powering. So this is necessary due to noise.
Instead of possibly loud generators.
And he said this was necessary due to environmental concerns. And food truck owners later said they'd have a particular problem with that. He successfully amended the rules last meeting and then voted against them anyway. And that caused
this time he voted for it.
He voted straight out for it. He changed his mind. He said he got his concerns addressed and asked a few questions about some of his previous concerns and voted for it, and that means that as of that passage, the next day, the 14th, food truck owners can go ahead and apply. And so anytime soon, you can see, as soon as they get worked out with the owners of whatever space they're going to be using, I expect to see more food trucks downtown.
So Terry Bellamy and Jan Davis voted against food trucks in that 5-2 vote.
They voted against allowing food trucks downtown. There was actually a separate vote in the rest of the rules which governed food trucks throughout the city, and that passed unanimously.
Right, and Bellamy had asked for that vote to be separate?
She did. And this was Amendment City to some degree. There were a lot of amendments floating around. But this that vote passed 4-3 to split the two parts into two separate votes. But because some people just want the rules to go through straightforward like they'd been proposed and voted on before. But they were voted on separately, and the rules allowing food trucks downtown passed 5-2, and the rules for the rest of the food trucks in the city passed unanimously.
All right then. Well, we'll see what happens with food trucks and where and when they will be.
Indeed.
All right, thank you, David.
My pleasure.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Local Matters.